In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Welcome, welcome, episode 21. We're coming of age. I guess formally, somebody just said on the preamble there before we started recording, we can drink now. Mark, what have you brought?
Oh man, today I've got a Sierra Nevada Celebration Fresh Hop IPA. Not one of my own, something I bought.
No, we want your own home brewed stuff.
Well, I did just a couple weeks ago, my brewing buddy and I, we did our first lager. He hollowed out a refrigerator so we could get two fermentation vessels in there, and we've got the temperature probe inside the beer, and it turns on the refrigerator when it gets too hot or when it starts getting to the, you know, a warmer temperature, and there you go. So we're
actually high tech.
Yeah, it turns it off when it gets cool enough, turns it on when it gets warm enough. So we're trying to keep it, you know, within like a 10 degree temperature band, which is not perfect, but it's about the best we can do right now. Making four cases. 10 gallons or so of lager. Well, I hope it turns out. We didn't quite get to the original gravity that we wanted. It was a little short, and I think it's because our sparging is a bit flaky. But
how much is 10 gallons in a useful unit?
It depends on if that unit is named Hans.
Oh! 1 gallon is one Hans.
Well, it's that 10 gallons would be roughly four cases, 48 bottles of beer on the wall. Yeah. A little more than that. Probably around 100 bottles of beer on the wall. 10 gallons, 100 bottles of beer. And let's just pass one down and sing a little song for everybody on the podcast today.
Yeah.
Hey. Does anybody else have anything interesting going on at the moment? I'll take that as a no then.
That's funny.
Each day just bleeds into the next, you know. So I was at PEX this week for Monday and Tuesday, which was good.
To talk about that. What's the deal there? What's the feel like at the moment?
You know, so this is my third PEX now, and it seems like
each
PEX is, and probably the last. You know, I think there was some allusion to this being the last PEX that they were going to do, and it just seems like every subsequent year it's gotten kind of quieter and slower. It ends up kind of being a party for partners and vendors, and it's good. It's a good vehicle for doing specific announcements, but I think it could probably do with just doing the big announcement once a year at VMworld. I'm not sure how much value the partners are actually getting out of it anymore. I mean, there's a few classes in there and some boot camp stuff, but a lot of that could be distributed to the partners via their local reps with a lot more flavor or a lot more local color.
Yeah. Historically, the PEX was like 50% tech training for the partners and 50% just partners doing, making sure that the businesses are all aligned for the next 10, 12 months. We see that shift going more and more just towards the business part of it, less towards the tech part of that. I think that was the first rumor that the tech classes would just disappear. It would be a business only event. I'd be surprised if it would disappear in a whole, because it does make sense to have this partner event decoupled from the customer event, which is VMworld, to do these joint announcements.
Hey, so Gabriel, you as a partner then, what do you put, I mean, you're attending there obviously at the moment, right? What do you look to get from an event like PEX?
I mean, it tends to be a vehicle to interact with your partner base to focus around the message of what's coming out, right? So, you know, obviously as Cisco, there are certain areas that we look at to talk about, like, you know, with the launch of the next version of ESXi into things we do with, say, like UCS Director or technologies like that. And it just ends up being a space for us to actually really kind of get a little more face time with our partners all in one area. I mean, from that standpoint, it's great because you're going to have pretty much every partner that jointly operates with you and VMware in one area, and you can capture some additional mind share on top of the big announcements that's coming out.
Yeah, I think that is the biggest value in that everyone is together within the same square mile for a week, and everyone that is there is working on partner alliances, and it's somehow like, okay, let's focus on everything we can do together with anyone in the next 10 months. And I think that makes it makes a lot of sense if you look at all the partnerships. Sometimes it's hard to, for a Cisco, for example, has so many partners, and even for a software company, they work with maybe 10 partners, and it's hard to make that focus if it's distributed throughout the year. It's good that having like that 1 week, okay, let's make sure we got everything that is technical alliance partnership nailed, good to go for another year.
Cool. Okay. So we're going to talk about some of the things that have been announced probably a little bit later on in the show. But I'm going to say this, right? Hans, you put the agenda together. As always, you do a cracking job on that. But up front and central on the agenda, I'm looking at Nigel Docker training.
Yeah. I put that in. I was like, we always try to push it out. And for now, well, you can say something about it now because it is actually news this week. You published a plural site training. So take your 2 minutes of fame here, Nigel.
So, yeah, I heard you saying what there, Mark. So to fill you in and the viewers, the listeners, right? To be honest, though, anybody who's still following me on Twitter and hasn't cut me off because it seems like it's all I've talked about all week, I published a Docker deep dive course on Pluralsight. So 5.5 hours of sweet, sweet Docker training. Hans, I'm figuring, right, you got the popcorn out and you gathered the family around.
Are you out of your freaking mind?
Now, I did like your comment, though, saying you've read the book and this is video training, so the movie equivalent, the movie's always a disappointment. You're probably right there. The book's probably better. But I've got to say, though, for me personally, it is pretty significant for me, okay, because I do a lot of these video training courses for Pluralsight. And I don't know, this one is probably going to be key for me as to whether or not I can stick with doing the video training at Pluralsight, because I get paid based on how many people watch the course, and I get royalties off of that. If this course hits the big time, and I kind of hope it will, because Docker is quite a trending topic, and I think it's a decent course. If it hits the big time, then I can probably stay doing these courses. If it doesn't, awkward situation, I might have to go back into real work, and that would suck.
Well, there's a lot of time in preparing those videos, right? And how long did it take you in working hours, days to prepare this 5-hour video?
So I'll give you an idea, right? I worked on it for 6 weeks, okay? And I worked on it almost every waking hour that I had. I spent 3 hours on Christmas Day on the course, 6 hours on Boxing Day, which is the day after Christmas Day. And in the UK, that's a big, big holiday. And I spent 6 hours on New Year's Day putting it together. Now, probably for my other Pluralsight courses, I don't work on them quite so many hours. But because Docker's like in constant development at the moment, if I like waited another 2 or 3 weeks to publish it, well, I mean, 1.5 of Docker is probably due out next week, actually. So if you snooze, you lose, you know what I mean? I wanted to get it out as soon as possible. And you know what? I do work really hard on the quality of these things. I want to make sure that I'm delivering something decent. So I reckon for 6 weeks, I probably worked Monday to Friday, 12 hours solid on the course every day. Wow. And not weekends.
That is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, yeah.
I mean, to make sure that pays off, that's 2 full months. I mean, 6 weeks, a little bit longer because it were long days. That's at least 2 full months of pay that needs to bring in. I hope it works out because, as you mentioned yourself, this is very, very early days, changing very rapidly. That was actually my first question towards you. Is there a possibility within the Pluralsight trading to make updates on that, and are you planning to do that?
Yeah, so I think when they go version 2, I definitely will update the course. I'll give you a for instance, right? The course I'm working on right now is Docker Swarm, so native Docker clustering, okay? But that as a technology is like, it's pretty much an alpha technology right now. So that one, when it gets published, that one will have to be retired as soon as Swarm goes 1.0, and I'll have to then produce an updated course. I think, generally speaking, when a new version of a technology comes out, within a certain period of time after that, they then retire the old courses. So I think that's how it works. But you know what? It's such a lot of fun doing this stuff. And it's kind of not like a real job, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't have to go out and see customers, and I don't have to go into an office every day and stuff. So I love it. It's just the, is it going to pay? You know, we've got to feed the kids and stuff. Don't know. Yeah. We'll see.
Can you do it in your underwear?
You know what? I do it in my...
beep, beep.
Yeah. It is quite often about 2:30 in the afternoon, and my wife might say, any chance you can pick the kids up from school today? And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I better take a shower if I'm going to do that.
I have to get dressed and take a shower. Well, you want to hang on to that as long as possible. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, we don't want to sidetrack the whole show on that. So I've done that. I think it's an awesome course. If you're interested in staying ahead of the curve on like container technology and stuff, check it out, Pluralsight Docker Deep Dive course. Anyway, so moving on to announcements.
Hey, I'm just going
to
say congratulations, Nigel. I think that sounds great.
Yeah, definitely.
No, thanks. I do appreciate that. It was tons of fun. I think the course is kind of fun as well, you know. I worked hard to try and make it interesting and not like, you know, a drag. But anyway... moving on to announcements, right? Something that I think was kind of interesting, but I did see you on Slack earlier, Gabriel, saying you thought it was a bit of a snore announcement, like yawn. The VMware plus Google Alliance. So I'll just let me just recap it real quick in like one sentence and then pass the ball over to you guys for your thoughts. And I'll give you my positive thoughts on it afterwards if nobody's positive, right? So it seems to me, right, like, VMware and Google have come together and made this kind of an alliance. So what we've got is a big public cloud player. And then on the other side of the fence in VMware, we've got a big corporate data center player, right? Potentially coming together, sharing platforms and technologies. And who knows, best of both worlds, the way I see it. But I don't think everybody sees it that way.
I read through the... through the article on the Register, which is already a humanized version of a press release, and I couldn't finish the article.
Giddy with joy?
My insomnia is forever fixed with press releases. No, yeah. I said it looked like they gave it about as much thought as they did to putting NFS 4.1 into vSphere 6.
But I'm ching. And that's for later in the show.
And that's harsh, I think, right?
No, I don't think it's harsh. I think it's spot on.
But no, I think the realities of it is, we're seeing this with Cisco. We're seeing it with a lot of other companies. What they're trying to do is become the point of presence broker for your cloud workloads, regardless of whose mega cloud they're sitting in, right? So I would look for a similar announcement with others, you know, SoftLayer or something like that. I mean, where Cisco is focusing on this inner cloud concept where you have multiple cloud brokers that you're able to leverage your resources across or have almost like a single pane of management cloud portal, right? Workload mobility between your on-premises and bursted workloads out to the cloud world. And that's a real ask from the customer. So I could see where there's a benefit to doing this partnership with Google and making it seamless and transparent. You know, they're not going to do anything with AWS because there's bad blood there from my basic understanding. So I would look for other possible, and it's definitely probably not going to happen with Azure. But, I would look to see some kind of offloading, because I think what the reality is the VCHS stuff, it's hard to build good, robust, multi-tenancy cloud delivery models or data centers. And this kind of gets them a step up getting into the marketplace in a little more rapid manner because Google already has such a huge physical footprint.
Yeah, so the question is, who's going to provide resources on the Google side to make this integration stuff work? I think the answer is, is there anybody there? Crickets.
They're going to use the car to do it.
Can use what? The Google car? The self-driving car.
Self-driving car is going to be building the self-driving cloud.
This is, in my opinion, and I may be completely off, but this is nowhere near a Google play. This is pure VMware play, and it's merely to get rid of some of the shadow IT stuff. And then only from a marketing perspective, like, well, you want to do shadow IT? No problem. We got this covered somehow with Google in the background. That's what I read, and I may be completely off, but more than that, I cannot get out of this.
I think it's a matter that VMware needed to do something to compete with Microsoft. That despite their inability to do much right, Microsoft is probably making some headway against VMware. With their integration with Azure, right? And so, you know, VMware has to do something. They can't do it with Amazon. They can't do it with Microsoft. They have no choice but to try to do it with Google. Like I say, who's going to push this on the Google side? You know, it's just purely opportunistic for them. They are so unready to do enterprise anything. You know, we'll see. Maybe they'll surprise everyone. I just don't believe it.
It's interesting. So the way that I see it, right? And it's maybe rehashing what you've all just said, but with a different I don't know. I thought it was kind of interesting. I mean, VMware, there's no way that those guys can compete at public cloud scale, right? They can't compete at the kind of scale of AWS, Google, or Azure, right? I mean, those guys are the three public cloud players right now. Google, on the other hand, they don't have a play. Like you just said, they've got nothing in the enterprise. So you bring the two together, and there's a bit of sharing goes on, right? So vCloud Air and its customers potentially get access to some of Google's cloud infrastructure on the back end. Well, that's great for VMware because on their own, they're not going to compete in the public cloud. But with an alliance with Google, that's maybe kind of, I don't know, in a roundabout way, giving them access to a, you know, a massively scalable public cloud back end. But then Google gets its claws into the data center in a way because it just doesn't have any data center customers at the moment. Now, whether Google's geared up to be able to do that, right? They do seem to, you know, half their software that you run anything on seems to be in alpha or beta for the whole time. But I don't know. I just thought VMware starts to get access to a scalable public cloud. Google, on the other hand, has an avenue into the data center and traditional enterprise customers. It could potentially work. I'm on my own, aren't I?
Yeah. You're way out there on your own. Yeah.
There's some validity to it. I mean, really, you know, this is what you do as a vendor. If you have a deficiency or a gap, you partner somebody who doesn't, and you make it look like there's this joint, you know, cohabitating super alliance going on, when the reality tends to be the weaker of those two tend to initiate and drive all the messaging around it. Was this a Google press release? No. This was a VMware press release. Exactly. And so that tells you what the driving factor and motivation is for it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's just the way business is done. At least they're thinking about it, right? And they're offering it up as an alternative.
That's because VMware doesn't really have any cloud. You know, they have no cloud stuff. They talk about it. They use the word cloud, but they really don't have any cloud. You know, so they have to do something. They have to manufacture it with stuff like this. It's baloney.
But also, yeah, so, they need to quit renaming it every 3 years, too, or every 3 months.
Yeah, didn't you call it VCHS just a minute ago?
It was vCloud, and then it was VCHS, and now it's vRealize or vAir. Or it's like, it's V-confusing.
It is V-confusing. Is that another thing that's a sign of a product or a platform that's not really working if you feel you've got to rename it all the time?
Just ask Citrix. How many times they rename that platform?
Yeah.
Or, you know, any number of products, right? When you feel like you kind of hit a roadmap, you either pivot your messaging or you pivot the product name and think that nobody's paying attention.
I had a dog once that had like 8 names and it just didn't work out well for it.
What, it had 8 names as in a first, a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or you just kept renaming it?
Just kept renaming the dog. It never worked and it finally just ran away.
Kevin is the best dog's name.
So we say, right, VMware doesn't have a play in the cloud, and I'm not going to disagree with that. And Google also doesn't have a play in the data center, right?
Qualify the VMware thing with the public cloud, because there are...
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry. That's a good shout. They don't have a public cloud play, right? Not a realistic or viable one. Not something certainly that's making AWS or Azure or anybody quake in their boots. On the other hand, Google doesn't have a play in the data center with traditional enterprises. Do they want one? No, seriously, because we've talked a lot in the past, haven't we, about that kind of that market shrinking and it all bleeding out to the public cloud.
They really don't. They want to cure world hunger. They want self-driving cars. You know, they want all this various stuff. They could care less about data center.
Yep.
But the only thing they really do that is legitimate is search. Everything else is tertiary, right? Look at all the products that have come and gone, and it seems like, you know, it's like a kid playing with their food. You know, I'm going to play with this until I, you know, or I'm going to eat this until I get bored, and then I'm going to play with it, right? And then it kind of goes away, and it falls on the floor, and the dog eats it. We've seen that a number of times with a number of Google quote unquote products.
Agreed. Yeah. If it doesn't bring them knowledge analytics, they're out.
Yeah, and they'll close it down. Oh, sorry, we're shutting it down.
Do you think Gmail these days, though, that it's not quite search, right? But that's up there. That's not going to go away, right? And that's a viable business for them now.
Oh, yeah. Do you know how much analytics they can do out of Gmail?
Come on. I can imagine, yeah.
Every ad you've ever seen has come from something you sent through Gmail.
Yeah.
So I had a crazy idea when I was thinking about all of this earlier and was, you know, you're going to laugh at me here, okay? But if EMC and VMware did eventually split, would Google look to pick up VMware?
Oh, no, come on.
What?
Oh,
they'd have an instant play into the enterprise and the data center, and it would be a great on-ramp for their public cloud, too.
What have you been drinking or smoking tonight?
Some of Mark's stuff.
Did you drink the entire
hey.
I take that nobody's on board with me there.
No.
Google doesn't make massive investments at that scale for that type of technology. They look at something that's far-reaching across a much larger number of endpoints.
Yep.
But they're playing catch-up, right, to AWS in the public cloud space. When you compare their offerings with Azure, they don't have the data center and the traditional enterprise apps and customers that Microsoft do, so that they're kind of on an uneven keel when it comes to competing with their two major competitors. Surely picking up VMware would let them go properly head-to-head with Microsoft.
That's by choice, though, because that's not their core competency, and it never will be.
No, but public cloud has never been Microsoft's core competency, but they're making a pretty decent hack of it now, no?
They're trying very hard. They've got to focus on trying to be, they're an enterprise company. Google's not an enterprise company. They're a consumer company, right? They're a consumer company. They really don't care.
But they've got cash.
It's also to Microsoft's advantage to become the de facto platform to host your SQL or your Exchange, because that way they can continue to monetize those platforms that could leak out into some other alternative, right? So if, you know, I look at Azure to be basically coming the hosting facility for all of your Office needs, all of your messaging, all of those things. And that's what they'll be building to replace the loss of the on-premises workloads and those licenses that they sold to them, and they'll do it on a per-user a la carte basis, and it allows them to track the licensing much better than they used to be able to. Because how many organizations do you know licensing was totally out of sync with what they were actually paying for, and there's a true-up period, and this way they can capture all of the revenue as it comes in and as the new user is added onto it, right? It's actually a pretty clever move if you think about it, because this way they know exactly how much development time cycles, R&D effort they can put into specific products based on the number of endpoints they're addressing.
Fair play. Okay, shall we pivot? Let's talk a little bit about some of the announcements that have come out of VMware this week. Should we kick the ball off with vSphere 6?
First of all, towards the event, it was what we said it would be, just iterations of the new product. And announcing an announcement of an announcement was a little bit over the top.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, as usual.
That's the norm these days, though, isn't it?
The tagline for PEX this year was Dare to Thrive. And everybody I talked to was like, what does that even mean? It's like,
Dare to be happy. We know you're miserable. Dare to enjoy life. We know you don't. What the hell is that?
I know you don't want to be here. I'm not trying to pick on them. I mean, you know, it's like, all right, well, great. Now I can have a virtual machine with 128 vCPUs and 4 terabytes of RAM. oh yeah, that's a daily occurrence.
So speeds and feeds aside, I did put on a small list here of things I did wanna point out in the vSphere 6 and announcements around that. A couple of things that I found interesting was the long distance and cross vCenter view motion. I think that's a nice add-on.
Yeah,
that's agreed. Very nice. Yes, but I'm curious about the size of the pipe you need. I'm not the latency issue being 100 milliseconds. That's awesome, right? I mean, I think that's great, but you're going to need a pretty hefty pipe to vMotion that monster VM, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean,
there's let's see, 192 or something crazy like that.
There's going to be 98.73 caveats here with the long distance vMotion. But at least the cross vCenter vMotion, cross vSwitch vMotion, all those things, great add-ons, great building on existing features. And I think VMware always has been leading the path, leading the way when it comes to moving, migrating workloads. First time we had vMotion, I mean, Microsoft took them 6 years to come after that.
But think about that, though. Do the VMware machines actually know anything about the network that's connecting this stuff? I mean, it could be that they had a bunch of customers that just told them they were doing it, and VMware said, oh, I guess we can make that a feature, and if we restrict the network environment that it's in, we actually don't have to do any work.
Well, you still have to make sure it's possible. For example, cross vCenter vMotion was just not possible.
Cross vCenter, right.
Yeah. If
long distance.
Yeah.
But long distance is, right? Because does the VMware machine care about what the network doesn't even know?
If you would have built a layer 2 or layer stretched. 3 even stretched over a very long distance, you would have done it anyway. Yeah, I totally see it's about stretching supported solution. But now it is fully supported, and there's probably a couple of caveats in there.
It's good that they've come to market with it, though, right?
Yeah,
definitely. Agreed.
So next up, I had content library. I like the idea of a content library where you can, but like for now, you put all your ISOs and templates somewhere in a data store. There's going to be a possibility to build a library for that. I think it's a great add-on. I see myself using that on a daily base. I did see somehow a limitation of 250 or so or 500 objects in the content library, and I'm not sure if that's going to be a limitation somehow.
So Hans, explain that to me, because I didn't read about that and I don't understand what a content library is.
Well, just look, if you wanna deploy a template or put a template somewhere, or you want to put an ISO somewhere for software, where do you put that now? Will you create a data store for it?
I'm with you. I think I'm with you now. So like an app store or something.
Yeah, but a library that is integrated within vCenter where you say, okay, I want to deploy a template. Where is that? Well, you find that in the library.
Yeah, right? Okay.
And same goes for ISOs and so on. You can now build that into a library. I'm not sure how that's going to look like in real life, but I like the idea of not having, where are my ISOs? Oh, they're hidden in that data store. No, you just pick them out of the library. I think that's a great add-on from a daily management perspective.
Fair play. Okay.
And then there's a couple of big boys. First of all, waiting for it for years now is vVols, virtual vols, volumes, or whatever they want to call it, is coming to market.
Yeah, and I think that's, in my opinion, probably the flagship announcement around vSphere 6.
Yes.
Personally. But you know what? We've been waiting for it, and it has been talked about for so long that I'm kind of like, okay, fair enough, yeah. Whereas if it hadn't been bigged up for, you know what, 2 or 3 years at least, I reckon now, I think I'd be more interested in it.
It is the perfect example of something that was announced, early announcement of an announcement, whatever Hans says, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the perfect example of that. And by the time it comes out, it's like, who gives a rip?
No, I totally disagree with that. My comment toward announcements of announcements of announcements of announcements is where it comes to marketing that says this is going to be our biggest announcement ever. But we can't even talk about what we're going to announce in the announcement of the announcement. And that was what got me so off this week in the last month. It was, this is going to be our biggest announcement ever. And everyone was like, wow, what are going to say? Well, it was just an iteration of a new product. In this case, speaking about vVols, this is technology development. It has been in technology preview. There have been a lot of people worried. It's not a hidden announcement within marketing. This is really technology development.
Oh, it's been out there. Everybody's known about it.
Yeah. The reason that it took so long probably is because it's so complicated to build. It's totally different from just deploying data stores. It's going to be every single file is going to be an object in itself within a blog-based protocol.
Yeah. So on the topic of vVols, right, I'd wanted to ask Mark this question because I think, Mark, you've obviously been involved in marketing at a lot of companies in the technical aspect. Because it was announced or pre-announced so flipping long ago, and you know, in my opinion, that kind of marketing has spoiled the engineering effort, because I don't doubt that it's a great feat of engineering here, okay? But because they've had to have so many other partners and people involved in developing it, you know, storage companies are wanting to plug into it and all that stuff. When you've got a technology that's coming and you have to play with so many partners, do you have to pre-announce so far in advance because there's literally no way that it would be kept a secret? Or is it actually, if I'm making sense here, right? So I'm saying, is your hand forced in pre-announcing because it's going to leak anyway? Or is that just seen as a really good tactic to pre-announce? Like, I don't know. I reckon it was 3 years in advance.
I think that probably marketing and engineering were out of sync, and that there were best guess estimates given by engineering as to when this would be available, and that the technology slipped quite a bit, right? So my guess is that VMware had hoped that this actually would have been available for GA, you know, a year ago, but okay, it wasn't, right? So,
well, they also got sidetracked with vSAN, right?
Well, yes, yeah. So, you know, it's not a great thing, and the fact that I don't think anybody really, you know, was going great guns over this. None of their partners were, I don't think. You know, maybe I'm wrong. And it really lost its excitement, yeah. I think, over the long haul. And that's not good. You know, it kind of like squirts out, and some people think, well, that's a future thing. I don't have to worry about it till later. And, you know, it's not like there's pent up interest in it. There's kind of like meh, right? It's a meh. Yeah. Well, and from a marketing perspective, that's a miss.
One of the upsides you do have with this is that you're probably going to have a great bunch of partners ready.
They were ready a year ago.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean, is that by the time that it's GA, you will be able to actually use and test this on a great number of products out there in the market, as in some other integrations somehow, and I can't bring something up right now. Well, maybe I can, the next one, is that the products will not be ready in the market, and it could just lose traction at all if there's not enough partners that are ready.
Human beings are interesting creatures. We like things that are new. We like things that are shiny. You know, we're curious about the intrigue of something that we don't know about, that we think might change the world. I mean, we're always looking into this stuff, right? It's what drives us in this, you know, it's what a lot of what drives a technology business is people's curiosity of the next big thing. Yeah. vVols was like the next big thing that already happened.
Well, and I think it was so important, and they knew it was so important that they couldn't half-ass it.
Well, also, there's a couple things here. One, vVols was announced before they bought Versto, which was essentially was supposed to be the driving technology behind vVols, right? And then they brought the Versto team in and kind of quietly killed it off. And, you know, when VAI came out, there was only a handful of platforms that supported it. And today, you know, pretty much everybody does. vVols announcing, there's only a handful of systems that support it. And more will down the road. I found it was interesting that none of the EMC technologies support vVols today.
Whoa!
Right? None of them.
But they were all like often behind the curve with VAAI and stuff like that as well. Hey, I've got one question on VVols then, maybe before you shift on to, I'm guessing you're going to go with NFS version 4.1 next, Hans. Mm-hmm. But on VVols, do we think it's going to be as significant a technology as VAAI? And I guess also on a similar topic then, because VAAI isn't a differentiator anymore. It's just a checkbox that everybody has.
Multifaceted question here. I think VVols is yes. VVols. So to summarize my 78 answers I have in my head. Yes, VVols is the same direction as VAAI. It is follow or get left behind. The problem we have, and I don't know how much that will be the same at VVols, is that VAAI has many different ways of implementing it. And although you can just checkbox it, not every checkbox is the same one. So there's multiple primitives, and even if you only support one of them, you got the checkbox. So it's I'm not sure how much that counts for VVols, if you can do VVols half-assed. Because there's a couple of VAAI integrations. Having VAAI was not necessarily better than not having VAAI. And it has all to do with never mind with what it has to do. I mean, it's about checkboxes. And I'm not sure. You can have a checkbox on VAAI having it well done and not well done. And I'm not sure if that's going to be the same thing with virtual volumes.
Okay, fair play. All right, then. Should we move on?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, that's cool.
So the next thing, and actually it is a big thing historically, is that vSphere 6 will now officially support NFS 4.1. Now, everyone that is just slightly working on NFS and vSphere has been complaining about the lack of a decent client within vSphere supporting NFS 3 since, I think, ESX3. You kind of know how long that has been. And now supporting NFS 4.1. Now, there's a couple of caveats here that
just
could,
a couple?
Well, you can follow up on me there, Gabe. Is that so? The good things. What is in the support of NFS 4.1? It is Kerberos authentication. I think that is the biggest one. In-band stateful server-side locking. Not sure what that technically means. If anyone knows, please fill me in. Session trunking, which gives multipathing. One of the bigger issues with the NFS version 3 support is that there was only a single path to your target. Now you can do true multipathing in NFS. And then some greater error recovery. These are the things that are in there. And I think the NFS multipathing as such is a great add-on and actually puts it on par with iSCSI and fiber channel multipathing. What it is lacking is true support for scale out, which would need PNFS parallelizing, striping the data instead of just pointing it back to that first and only target. However, leaving aside PNFS, there's a couple of other things that are also not supported in the NFS 4.1, and these are bigger issues. It is not supported for VVols. It is not supported for SRM, SIOC, and SDRS. And it doesn't have VAAI.
Well, yeah, it doesn't have a lot of things, and it's more like kind of fault tolerance 1.0 was. Right? It's like,
yes,
there is a specific use case where you might want to do this, but you know what? There's probably other alternatives out there that are better. You know, let's get the code out there. Let's build upon it. I mean, for me personally, and you know, I had discussions with PEX this week with several people about this. It appears to me that the VMware storage stack strategy is to get as much storage breadth as possible across their customer base and understanding to the point where they can be the replacement for the VNXs, the Nimbles, the Tintrees, that group of, you know, mid-range storage platforms out there that they've had to sit their blocks on for so long. And that's a longer strategic message or a smaller strategic plan, and it doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, just take a look at where the direction of how we build and how we provision workloads in the data center is going. EMC is essentially transitioning from a storage array company to a cloud, hybrid cloud platform, and an, you know, an infrastructure delivery vehicle. You know, that's the other things that were announced this week with their jump into, you know, VSpecs Prime Blue or whatever it's called.
It does. And I think we're going to talk about VSpecs Blue in just a second, but I've got a couple of things to say on NFS support, right? So just based on my history and the kind of companies I've worked at, probably in the last 7 or 8 years, primarily in the financial services sector, okay? I was quite a big fan of VMware over NFS just because I could have it in my lab at home, right? I didn't have any fiber channel infrastructure, so I got to know VMware with NFS. And I tried to push it at some of these organizations I was at. And the two things that they always said to me about NFS v3, number one, lack of security, okay? So NFS version 4 mandates strong security, Kerberos, okay? So that's awesome in my opinion, okay? And then performance, NFS version 3 was always a very chatty network protocol. So they've got a bunch of stuff in there with NFS version 4.x that just makes it much less chatty on the network, compound RPCs, all of that kind of jazz, right? Nobody ever mentioned PNFS. And I have worked at a company where we had a PNFS array, and we had it for more than a couple of years, and we gave it back, and the lawyers were involved because it was a complex beast and they could never fix the performance problems on it. I personally, I'm not surprised that VMware stayed clear of PNFS. And I think it's good that, you know, what they've got in there at the moment, I think is good. The performance enhancements, the security, fair enough, okay. It doesn't support VAAI. It doesn't support a bunch of other stuff, right? I reckon that that's going to come in 6.1 or 6.2 at the latest.
Well, at least, because, I mean, those are majors.
They are. I agree.
Not having support for VAAI is a major.
Yeah,
and
I get it.
I also feel that not having support for virtual volumes is also a major. I think they should. That should have been in there. At least those two.
Nah, you know, I think virtual volumes is always going to come on a block-based stack first. That's their primary push, isn't it? Their primary storage focus has tended to be around fiber channel and block. I personally always expected that vVols would come there first and then eventually trickle down. Because NFS, as much as I've liked it, right, it is a bit of a second-class citizen in the VMware world. It'll get it later, just like it did with VAAI-type primitives, right? They all came later on in the NFS stack. So I personally think it's a good move.
I agree with you, and it's too bad they didn't pick up VAAI and vVols. Okay, so that will come later, but the NFS 4 is a much less chatty, which basically means you can run much higher level workloads or more active workloads against it, right? Yeah. The chattiness kills you it kills a server with a lot of unnecessary requests, right? NFS is a stateless protocol, which means it's always checking to see how things are, and NFS 4 fixes a lot of that.
Yeah, stateful. Right?
And yes, it's stateful, and so there's a lot less wire traffic. And for a server under load, it cuts down useless protocol chatter. I don't know, was 50%, 30%? What's the number, Nigel? It's a big number.
So I wrote some blog articles on it in the past, and just from memory, it's probably north of 50% in certain circumstances that it cuts down on.
Yeah, I mean it's a big deal. So having it out there, and they might just say, well, nobody's actually going to really use it yet. There might be a few people, you know, a couple of customers or maybe one or two key customers that will. But otherwise, just getting it in there and saying, okay, you know, because in a company like VMware, you've got a group that's responsible for getting this done. And it's probably like, well, if we don't get this out here now, then we're going to have to wait till the next release cycle. They're better off to get it out there now, get some people banging on it, and then integrate the rest of the functionality in with it. Because it is really a big step forward for them being able to handle bigger workloads over NFS.
Yeah. Well,
one of the questions now will be, how long will it take the partners to be compliant with NFS 4.1 because, frankly, most of them couldn't care because VMware wasn't following.
Yeah, there's a very short list of systems that support NFS 4.1.
But because VMware do now, there's a pretty good chance I'd say that that would change. I mean, if anybody's going to change that, it's going to be VMware, right? VMware announced something, and people are scrambling to cozy up to them on it. So I don't know. I could see.
Well,
that
I don't know. I don't know who does. I imagine NetApp does.
Yeah, NetApp does. NetApp has already 4.1 integration with Red Hat.
Yeah. So there are undoubtedly some really key customers that have both NetApp and VMware that really, really wanted this.
And NetApp historically has been the driver for NFS within VMware anyhow. So,
yeah. Hey, I take
it. Wonder why.
I take it that VNX doesn't, right?
Fact check here. VNX does. Isilon does. VNXE doesn't.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough. I got those facts today.
No, that's good. Thanks for calling us out on that, Hans. That's really good. Should we shift on to vSAN 6?
There's one small one that I want to point out in between because I forgot it in the list and something Gabriel mentioned fault tolerance before. Fault tolerance, as of now, will have multi-vCPU support. And that is a biggie because previously, fault tolerance, so if you don't have failover tolerance with a zero RPO-RTO in your application, you had to use fault tolerance on the VM level to keep your VM sync in two different arrays. The problem with that is that it was single vCPU limited, and now that they have multi-vCPU, you have the possibility to make snapshots and backups of it, because that was lacking before.
So, quick question then before we shift on. Lot of little kind of maybe, and I'm not doing them any disrespect here, incremental announcements, right? But are there enough of them for this to be, you know what, vSphere is really kicking on in the maturity?
Yes, I think so. I think if you see the whole list, it's a huge list of improvements together with a list of new things. Yes, I think there's enough in this to call this a major upgrade.
I'd agree. Shall we talk about vSAN 6.0? Come on, we gave Microsoft a hard time for skipping Windows 9, right? And yeah, that was just one major version.
Yeah, this is. I think it's a lot. Going to vSAN 6 is not doing anything good rather than marketing. I don't like it that they jumped so many numbers. However,
but it looks good, doesn't it?
No. I know.
Just think of all the extra value you got because you didn't have to buy 2, 3, 4, and 5.
I wouldn't even have given it a number. I would have just said vSAN part of vSphere 6.0. And I wouldn't even – if you want to make it on par with the product, just make it part of the product. Calling it vSAN 6.0 is so far off because it's merely a 1.5 or 2.0 to give some people respect here. What I have noticed is that there were some documents, and I couldn't find them, that were speaking about, before the announcements, were speaking about vSAN 5.5. So somehow there have been people already jumping to that, and I'm not sure it was officially a vSAN 5.5 in between. Jumping to the 6, I know where it comes from, how it makes sense, but I don't like it.
Aside from that, though, right, it actually, I think, it looks pretty decent, doesn't it?
Definitely. So there's two things that I besides the bigger clusters is good, 64 hosts, that's definitely a good one. The all-flash configuration, and it's not just support for all-flash. It's still going to have, you're going to need like a couple of SLCs in the front and then MLCs in the back, but it's going to change it instead of a read-write cache to a full write cache because you don't need a read cache anymore.
Okay.
I think that is a nice change when you go to an all-flash solution with that vSAN. One thing that I liked most from the vSAN announcement was that they've added fault domain towards rack awareness. And I really like that when people in a scale-out infrastructure work with rack awareness fault domains.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You know what I thought was really good about vSAN as well? And I called this out on Twitter earlier, and I was staggered that I didn't get any responses. But vSAN 6.0, if you install it new, it gets a new on-disk format, like a layout. They call it the V2 on-disk format. And it's based on that Versto FS, right? But if you upgrade from a previous version, then it's all online and a rolling upgrade, and it upgrades the on-disk format. Now, if we wind the clock back 4, 5, maybe 6 weeks, and I want to say Scale.io, not Scale.io, Extreme.io, those guys changed their on-disk format, and we got this big spiel about, you know, when you change low-level stuff like on-disk format, it's inevitable that it's going to be a destructive upgrade here. Hang on a sec. We've got vSAN here doing what sounds like a very similar thing, unless I'm missing something major here, and it's all online as part of a rolling upgrade. So I shouted out on Twitter, does that mean then that vSAN architecturally is superior to Extreme.io? And it was tumbleweeds. Yep. Nobody bit. I couldn't believe it.
I didn't see it. I'm sorry. I missed
that. No, it's okay. But
I've seen the tweet.
God, and that's hilarious.
I've seen the tweet, and I was sure to be silent on that response because I was already in a couple of other fights on Twitter today. Oh, so I was not going to take that bait.
But I thought that was impressive of vSAN, but does it highlight that architecturally it's superior? And the lack of a response, I did wonder, and it's sheer speculation here, but have they been told we don't answer any questions comparing it to that?
I'm not sure, and that's why I don't want to speculate on it. I'm not sure what has changed is at the same level and depth.
Maybe not. So I'm not going to let that rest. Over the next few days, I'm going to dig around that. I'm doing it not to have a pop at Extreme.io, but to say,
yes, you hang are. On a sec,
vSAN. No, I'm not. I'm not. vSAN,
are you sure?
Architecturally.
Sounds like that to me, too.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, no, I'm genuinely curious. If it is a similar low-level change and vSAN's doing it online as part of a rolling upgrade, massive old thumbs up to vSAN there. Well done. But I could be wrong.
Yeah. I agree. It looks like they got something right there.
Yeah,
you know, it looks like it was architected for future expansion adjustment, probably expansion.
Yeah, you also mentioned the Versto integration.
Yeah,
that also brings some enhancements coming to snapshots and so that's definitely going to be good. There was one thing that looks trivial, but I like it from an R&D perspective, is that they brought in some extra support for disk and disk group maintenance. Like when you add disks and evacuate disks, that they will be able to.
Blinking lights.
Yeah, blinking lights.
Yeah.
You think it's trivial, but knowing how many systems this has to be able to run on, I know this is just not simple to integrate that with all the different disks and firmwares and blah, 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 blah. And I like it that they I should not be surprised, right? It should be basics, but it's overlooked that so many times that they leave that to the hardware vendor.
No, that kind of stuff, that adds the enterprise stamp to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit of a side issue here, right? But I've been at a company before where they had a so-called enterprise storage array, and the power buttons on the power blocks at the back where the mains feeds came in, the little rocker switches, they weren't recessed and they didn't have a little plastic cap over them. And we had one feed fail into a storage array one day, and the engineer came on site, put his hand inside the box, started fiddling around, and he knocked the switch on the one remaining active power supply. We lost data on that box over a simple thing like the switch wasn't recessed and it didn't have a little plastic cap over. Little stuff
like
that.
Well, I hope you fired that guy.
Does, you know what? We did a lot to make sure that he didn't get fired because that's not his fault, really.
And right. No, it's
honestly,
not.
The guy was mortified. And it could have happened to anyone. But I think I get what you're saying. But my point being here, those kind of little things, they can matter and they do add up. So I think, you know, the whole vSphere 6 thing, I think fairly decent upgrades coming there. vSAN 6 as well, really may potentially be kicking on. I've not been a big fan of it in the past. We'll wait and see how it turns out on version 6, right? But I think the signs are moderately positive, if I can say that.
Yes, for a 2.0 product, definitely.
6.0.
Oh, and one last small thing.
On the VMware show.
On the VMware show, is that they made the VDPA, the Advanced Data Protection product, now within the licenses. So it's now integrated in one of the licenses. It means you don't have to buy it anymore. It just means that no one bought it before.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of licenses, really quick, I do want to talk about this. If you're on Enterprise Plus licensing, then you get the VIO, so the VMware Integrated OpenStack.
Yes.
I know we're running on a long show already as it is, but is this going to be significant for OpenStack? Is this going to be, I think it was VMIS mentioned it earlier in the week in a blog post, is this the easy button for OpenStack being integrated with VMware?
Yes and no. For me, this is how I read it. It is not, I want to build an OpenStack infrastructure. Let's buy VMware for that. This is, I am using VMware Enterprise Plus in my data center. What could OpenStack do more for me? That's what it is for me. What it is doing, for people that are on VMware and that want to go into OpenStack, it is giving you that easy push button start. It's just merely deploying an appliance, and you could be started. It has the integrated updates, which is a big issue with OpenStack today.
Massive.
Yes. Yeah. So it has already a couple of those things integrated. I think it will be the easy push button, let me see what OpenStack can do for me. And that's probably the reason why it is integrated within the licenses.
What's in it for VMware then? Surely won't they potentially stand to lose out on infrastructure to OpenStack?
What's in it for VMware? People that are not just running away, trying it out with different deployments?
Is anyone running away at the moment? It's too hard to run away to OpenStack, isn't it?
Well, it's better to be there before they run away.
I kind of have a different take. For me, it's basically a mechanism for people to try out OpenStack in a VMware environment and see if it's going to work out for them. And those traditionally are going to be Enterprise Plus customers. It's not going to be the people who are, you know, downstream. And let's face it, those are not your typical OpenStack customers anyway. You know, so it's kind of a try it if you like it. But I don't think that me personally, I don't see any company that wants to run a legitimate OpenStack implementation leveraging vSphere as the hypervisor in that instance. Financially, it destroys the cost model. Because people who are leveraging those type of workloads, traditionally your managed service providers or your smaller cloud providers, think about that tier between the jump down between Google and, you know, your local ISP. There's this huge swath of these companies out there that are starting to leverage OpenStack as their delivery model. And they're not going to pay VMware licensing for that because it breaks the cost model immediately. It's already, they can't compete at price with, you know, with Oracle, or not an Oracle, but with, you know, Google and Amazon and Azure. They have to add some kind of value add portion to it. And so they have really smart engineers that are just, you know, tend to be Linux monkeys, and they're going to go that route. They don't pay for the hypervisor.
I'm not sure I agree that the use case for OpenStack is breaking the VMware licensing. I'm not sure that is the only reason why you would want to run an OpenStack environment.
$7,000 per two-socket host?
No, I mean, what you're saying is that there's no technology advantage in using OpenStack at all other than running away from VMware licensing.
I'll continue to stand by that. I mean, great. Yeah, it might be a better compute replacement. But then again, the type of workloads you're provisioning on OpenStack, they shouldn't have to – the application should determine the failure scenario and the distributedness of it. I don't look at OpenStack as a general purpose workload delivery system in that particular respect. It still has some very specific use cases for similar in the same concept to Docker, right? So in that respect, it is not a panacea. It's not this, you know, one-stop all. You know, as much as people would like to call it the AWS for on-premises internal cloud, it's not well-suited quite there yet for what we would consider traditional production tier one workloads. So it still is something that's geared towards the developer community with inside the organization and not the general purpose line of business application delivery model.
So it's not – put things all in a line here. If I have a production environment and I already have Enterprise Plus licensing, I can do nothing with free OpenStack on top of my infrastructure. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying you can't do it.
You're saying it has no use. Does it have use or? I'm just questioning because I haven't worked on
OpenStack. Limited use case, I think you're saying.
Is there a use case for?
I think it has limited applicability, right? Because if I'm already a VMware shop, and let's think about it, the size of customer that they're working with already that's paying for Enterprise Plus licenses at scale, they have ELA, so they have access to all the VCACs that are vRealize and all those other products. They're already familiar with those. They don't have to go through the six-month release cycle that's involved with OpenStack and the complexity of it. You know, this is not something that is what we would generally consider a point-and-click delivery vehicle.
Well, isn't that what the integrated OpenStack for VMware is promising to give us?
It integrates a few portions of or a few projects of it or some of the core aspects of it, but it's not going to give you the full OpenStack experience. For that, you're going to have to spend a lot of time and effort to get it all working together. And I just
the full OpenStack experience involves beating your head against the wall for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I still think it's probably developed or focused point is on smaller development implementations and not what I would call true production.
Well, I think we just have a good topic for a new discussion or our LinkedIn group.
Yeah, I think we do, yeah. I think I'm with you there, though, Gabriel. Hey, gents, it's getting into a long show, I think, here. We still haven't covered vSpecs Blue, if that's even how you pronounce it. Do we want to do that on today's show, or do we want to park that for next week?
Let's park that one for next week.
I want to get another beer.
I think we're going
to
wrap
it up. But not come back to the show.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, gents, great discussion. Lots gone on this week, stuff that we haven't had a chance to discuss. vSpecs Blue, is that even how you pronounce it, by the way?
Yep.
Okay, so we're going to have to park that for next week's show. Also, the new VCE announcement about a converged infrastructure solution with NSX, that gets parked as well. We won't bother with mergers and acquisitions, nothing much other than VMware picking up, I don't know if I've pronounced this right either, Imidio, meh, as far as I'm concerned. One thing I do want to mention, though, is our good friend Enrico Signoretti is organizing an event in London on the 22nd of April called Tech Unplugged. Yeah, give him props for that. Hans and I are going to be at the event, along with Chris Evans, Martin Glassborough, Enrico himself, and Stephen Foskett. And we are just going to...
April 22nd. April 22nd in London.
Oh, man. I got to figure out how to get there.
Honestly, we're just going to have an... I'm being genuine here, well, as genuine as I can be. We are going to have just an awesome time talking about cool new technologies, how it's impacting the enterprise, all that kind of stuff. If you're going to be in London or around the area on the 22nd of April, sign up, techunplugged.io. Come and join us and get involved with the discussion because I do think that's going to be a lot of fun.
That does sound great. Are you going to go out for curry?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we're doing a curry the night before, aren't we?
Well, no, we are having our events on April 22nd in London, and apparently on April 23 in London, there's the VMUG.
That's
so
right.
We're probably going to stay over for the day after and having a vCurry in between the two events. So between the 22nd in the evening, we're definitely going to meet up with the VMUG people and having some beers and curry.
And I'm
You named a lot of my favorite people in this industry. That really sounds like fun.
Oh, honestly, it does, yeah. Now, I'm the first speaker at something crazy like 9 o'clock, so I'm going to be in London the night before as well, if anybody's around. So, yeah, techunplugged.io, be there.
Captain's log entry. Captain Dogger. HMS Containerizer. A strange log entry. Whilst out patrolling the waters, containerizing everything we sees, we receives a carrier pigeon bearing a single high priority message. So I opens the message immediately, and what does it say? Mandatory training course, Docker Deep Dive. Address www.stop.com. Then a funny line leaning to one side. Then the word courses, another angled line, and then docker-deep-dive. End of message. So I say to myself, aye, obviously important. Else why be so cryptic? I mean, training course, I understands. But docker? Maybe they means dock her, as in her the ship. Bring her into dock. Then the deep dive. Maybe we's found something important on the ocean floor, and we needs to perform a top secret deep dive mission. But then there be this address. Well, in all my times, I's never seen an address like that before. www.stop.com. Maybe west. But the rest be a mystery. So I instructs my helmsman, Mr. Kubernetes, docker, take her straight back to dock. The westmost point of the empire. And I prepares my deep diving suit. Anyway, the next day we arrives in dock, and let me tell yer, aye, there be a huge swarm of new ships being readied for something that looks important. And then there be this machine building container vessels so fast and easy you'd not believe your eyes. Aye, something important's definitely going down. And this here Docker deep dive training obviously be a key part of it. So I disembarks in search of this strange address. So as discreetly asks a local for directions. Anyway, cut a long story short, I ends up at a bar in front of a machine like I never seen before. Moving pictures and all. The barkeep takes the address I has and punches its coordinates into this machine thing. West and all the rest. What do you know? An image of a dashingly handsome man giving me top secret cryptic instructions. Now this fella's to be taken seriously, alright. Posh British accent. Obviously some high-ranking official. And my goodness, he knows what he's talking about. Though it be all nonsense to me. I mean, he be talking about engines and images and all stuff that I knows about, or at least I thought I did. You see, the images he's describing, they be nothing like the kind of images I's always confiscating off the crew when we's away at sea on long missions. Nay, they be nothing like those kind of images, I tell ya. But this here Nigel fella, He's going on and on about images and containers and engines. All fascinating stuff, no doubt. But it means nothing to me. I mean, as all prepared for a deep dive and exercise in a water pit and the likes. But no, this fella's all talking about some software revolution. Microservices and clouds. Obviously all code words for something important, but without knowing what these strange code words mean, it be all nonsense. So I'm sailing the ship straight back to Naval Command for further instructions. There obviously be something major going down. On that docker deep dive training be what's needed to understand what be happening. And I needs to know what these code words are. I mean, docker files, kernel namespaces. I personally know Colonel Lord Wisting. But who be this kernel namespaces fella? Obviously a code name for a top colonel in the Navy. Aye, who knows? Maybe it be a code name for me. Maybe I's about to be promoted. Colonel Dogger sounds great, don't it? Anyway, heading to Naval Command at top speed. End of log entry.